If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hello and welcome to a Tuesday Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid and all across the Sports Grid network. That includes sportsgrid.com/watch, where you can find your favorite destination to consume everything all across the grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. We are here together for the next 3 hours up until 11 a.m. Eastern Time, a Tuesday morning ahead of a huge night in college hoops, on a big Monday night of college basketball as well. Fewer than 3 weeks remain before Selection Sunday for that NCAA tournament bracket to be unveiled. We are also firmly in the stretch run of this NBA season. The regular season dwindling down. Now a full week after the All-Star break in DRS. Some big comebacks to break down in an 8-game NBA slate on a Monday night. This Tuesday continues Combine Week in Indianapolis. More news from the Scouting Combine in Indy. All of that and plenty more over these next 3 hours up until 11 a.m. Eastern.
Yeah, good stuff so we can go over. And also, we had some pretty good handicaps from yesterday's show in both the NBA and also NCAA action, whether it's really good basketball teams or really poor basketball teams. But the one thing we know, which we will get into today, as I stated coming out of the break, the Sixers had a quick turnaround. If they wanted to show their front office that they could do some things, now would be a good time to do that. Oh, Ben, they did some things yesterday. Yes, they did.
Perhaps the worst bet I have ever made at the All-Star break with a profit boost on the FanDuel Sportsbook. A small sprinkle on Philadelphia in a play-in tournament position to make the actual postseason. It does not seem as though that wager is going to cash. We'll talk about the dumpster fire in Philly in just a little bit. But DRS, history last night in the NBA. For a second consecutive night, although a change of venue, it was the Thunder, the best team out west, taking on the Minnesota Timberwolves, a team that reached the Western Conference Finals just a season ago. And OKC beat Minnesota in Minneapolis on Sunday night by 7. Pretty comfortable, although the T-Wolves did cover as an 8.5-point dog. Last night in OKC, Minnesota, 12-point underdog by the time we get the tip. And it seemed as though the NBA's best team in the Western Conference, the Thunder, would roll to an easy win, up by as many as 25 points late in the third quarter, leading by 24 entering the fourth and final quarter. Minnesota rallies the entire way back in those final 12 minutes, ending regulation on a 16-zip run to force overtime, and the Timberwolves win it in OT. A dramatic comeback by the T-Wolves last night, winning outright as a 12-point underdog, 131-128 on the road in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, we told you yesterday, looking at that game, thought the Thunder would win, and rightfully so, they were favored by close to 2 touchdowns. But the better bet in that game, no doubt, was the over, 131-128, fresh off of performance the night before, which they went over their total as well. No Rudy Gobert in the lineup, no problem for the Timberwolves if they cruise. By the way, 41-19 against the best team in the NBA at home is absolutely astounding. Like SGA astounding. At 39-10-8, and it still wasn't enough. This is a team usually known for playing really good defense. Didn't bring too much defense last night for the Thunder, and that's what caught them in the fourth quarter and in overtime.
DRS, Minnesota, one of the best underdog teams in the NBA. Now 10-5-1 against the number, winning outright 7 times. The T-Wolves, who had very high expectations entering this season in the Western Conference, have kind of been middling in a way. Could this provide a spark for the T-Wolves to get out of play-in tournament position and just into the postseason from the very start? The first team in NBA history to be trailing by at least 20 points in the fourth quarter and come all the way back to beat a team with a winning percentage of 80% or better. That was the Oklahoma City Thunder, 46-10 entering last night. Lost number 11 this year. Donnie, you mentioned the Philadelphia 76ers. A slight home favorite yesterday against the Chicago Bulls. An important game for play-in tourney positioning in the Eastern Conference. Both teams well below 500, but somehow, some way, might reach the NBA postseason. The Sixers, who did not have Joel Embiid as he sat out to rest the knee that has had tons of issues this year, lose by 30-plus inside the Wells Fargo Center on their home floor. Chicago embarrasses the 76ers, 142-110. Make that 8 losses in a row for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, it's time to pull the plug at this point. By the way, Ben, they were down as many as 50 points on their home court, getting loudly booed, and rightfully so. It's time to shut it down because you do have that top 6 protected pick. They got to fall in the top 6. You're right around one of the worst records in the NBA. There's no excuse for bringing Joel Embiid back and saying, hey, we can make a run to get into the play-in tournament, only to be knocked out probably in the play-in tournament, let alone getting into the first round and going up against, let's just say, the Boston Celtics or the Cleveland Cavaliers. End the season right now, Sixers. Pull the plug. 20 wins. You shouldn't get the 21 when it's all said and done. We're used to the tank in Philadelphia. It's okay. Go ahead and tank again.
We had an idea that JoJo would not play as he has been dealing with the issues for his injured knee and what the next prognosis is in Philadelphia. And they were still a 4.5-point home favorite. The Bulls win outright. It is over. It is done. I am ripping up my playoff ticket. My thought was get into the play-in tournament, and maybe there's a chance. The 76ers, despite being 17 games sub 500, are still only 2.5 games out of a play-in tourney spot, but it is over. College basketball, top 10 tilt last night in Lubbock between Texas Tech and Houston. The Cougs entered last night, DRS, number 4 in the country, winners of 19 of their last 21 games. The only loss was at home against these Red Raiders. They avenge that L. They win by 8 on the road, 69-61, outright as a 2.5-point road favorite, covering the number. And for a second consecutive year, both years Houston has been in the Big 12, a conference championship for Kelvin Sampson and the Cougs. One of the best programs in the last decade in college basketball continues it last night in Lubbock.
Yeah, by the way, -1.5 for most of the day. This line crashed to a -4.5 favorite around game time for the Houston Cougars. Still didn't matter. 69-61 was the victory, but the handicap was simple in this one. I actually would have went Texas Tech if their leading three-point shooter was available in this game, because that's how you beat Houston. You take a look at the final statistics from three-point range without their best shooter. 6 of 30, Ben, 20%. That's all she wrote. That's the only handicap I needed. Houston was a heavy public favorite last night, but the public is going to win their fair share of the games, I should say, and they did last night, and that was the right move.
No chance for Chance McMillan to play last night for Texas Tech. A couple of key injuries for the Red Raiders. Houston, in the last 3 years, from the American to the Big 12 now for 2 consecutive seasons, a conference title to boot in all three, 52-7 straight up in conference play. In a atrocious basketball game last night in Lincoln, Nebraska, neither team reaches the 50-point benchmark. But Michigan does hold on down the stretch. 49-46 inside Pinnacle Bank Arena to knock off Nebraska, who really only had Bryce Williams doing anything. And he passed up a shot down the stretch to try to win it for the Huskers to Connor Asijan, who missed a 3-pointer. The Wolverines now 13-3, tied in the top spot for the Big Ten alongside the Spartans. Michigan State, though, the direct head-to-head tiebreaker advantage.
Yeah, I thought Nebraska was the right play in this game. Came up short at home, and my handicap was basically, hey, if Michigan doesn't shoot average from three-point range, like let's just say 35%, that's advantage Nebraska. They end up shooting 5-for-27, under 20%, and I still didn't win that. So sometimes, even when you look at the handicap that you're focused on, it doesn't work out in the final score, and it didn't yesterday. An ugly basketball game with, if you're Nebraska, and you tell me your team is going to come into your building and shoot under 30% as a team, and 61% from the free throw line, that's got to be a victory. And it was a loss. Bad loss for Nebraska.
Quickly, Kansas falls out of the AP top 25 for the first time in 4 years. Then beats Colorado on the road, 71-64, even covering ever so slightly as a 6.5-point favorite. And the NFL scouting combine news, Abdul Carter, a shoulder issue, won't work out at the combine. Not really that big of a deal.
No, it's not. We saw that from the playoff run there where he was a little bit banged up. But also in the other Kansas, I told you, Ben, hey, look, dropping out of the ratings now. You know, you're not in the top 25. The fog, hey, that nice new arena on campus, man. Reinvigorate that fan base and your team here. Get back ranked again. I can see it coming.
The win last night in Boulder, tush push, trying to be banned. Yeah. Donnie will have much to say later on in the show. More on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We enter the zone on a big Monday night around college basketball. Fewer than 3 weeks remain until Selection Sunday. About 2 weeks left in the regular season at the high major level. But there is really not much left to play for in the Big 12 championship race in the regular season because Houston is now in the conference. But there's no problem in H-Town. 2 years in the Big 12 and a conference title to boot in each of the two as the Cougs go on the road last night and make a statement in Lubbock, knocking off the Red Raiders in a top 10 tilt against 10th-ranked Texas Tech, 69-61. Now, Grant McCaslin's team was without a couple of key contributors last night, so the line closing closer to 4.5 points in favor of Houston. For most of the day, a slight 1.5 favorite, 2.5-point spread. Houston makes good on whatever number you bet. They win by a 69-61, a closing total of 131 and a hook, barely stays under in Houston DRS at 16-1. Now outright in the Big 12 has clinched at least a share of the regular season crown, soon to be a solo winner of the regular season championship in the Big 12.
Really good on offense, really good on defense. That's a recipe for success that you saw play out. And by the way, you see the final score, 69-61, 8-point margin. That's great against a top 10 team. But quite frankly, if you just look at the box score, you're wondering why it's not actually higher. On the road, Houston shot 45% as a team. At home, Texas Tech, 30% as a team. 3-point shots, 50% for Houston on the road, 20% at home for Texas Tech. And then 83% from the free throw line here for Houston and 81% on the free throw line for the Texas Tech Red Raiders. But the handicap, as we pointed out in the 7-7, at least for me, was pretty simple. If you're down a lot of your hired guns from the outside, which is where you absolutely have to beat Houston, you're already behind the eight ball before the game starts. And I agree with that line movement, too. That -1.5 looked pretty simple during the day, and the public absolutely hammering that throughout the day. And we're correct, because whether they got the 1.5 or the 4.5, it didn't matter. Houston was still the covering right side. The only question is going to be is, again, 24-4 in the season, 16-1 in a major conference. It's great. But does this type of strategy and style actually work when you go up against a hot offensive team that's keyed in from three-point range? Because the one thing you do like with Houston, they'll play a lot of closer games within double-digit margins. But also, you would like to see some of those games where it's like, hey, we're just going to wipe the floor with the team. So it's that double-edged sword. Yeah, we're used to being a lot of basketball games, but once you get to the tournament, you need those 7 victories. A lot of those are going to be close games, which might not go your direction. We'll see if they can thread that needle once again in March Madness coming up.
7th most efficient offense in the country, and they have a bunch of contributors. Milos Yuzon, the guy leading the way for Houston last night with 22 points. No Chance McMillan for Texas Tech, averaging better than 15 points per game this year, second leading scorer for the Red Raiders. But still, when you talk about this Houston team, DRS, history last night, the first team in more than a century in college basketball to join an existing power conference and win 2 consecutive conference regular season crowns. There were some questions. Could the Cougars take what they had done in dominant fashion in the American and have it translate to basketball's best conference the last few years overall, the Big 12? The answer has been a resounding yes. Houston in the last 3 years, dating back to their final season in the AAC, now 52-7. Straight up. That is the best win percentage in college basketball in conference play, with the most wins matching that of Drake at 52. And DRS, winning on the road is supposed to be a difficult thing, especially at the high major level throughout your conference schedule. Kelvin Sampson's Cougs have now won 13 consecutive road games. That is the nation's longest active road winning streak. These are the recipes for a formidable side that it does not matter where they play. It does not matter about who they match up against. They are going to be favored and expected to win a majority of the time. And the Cougs have proven that here in the last 2 years in the Big 12.
Yes, they have. And also, maybe again, we're not saying like the downfall is coming, because you do take a look at those four losses, three of those in overtime, and it's, hey, a semi-home-and-home game against Auburn, who's the top team in the country. Like, they are battle-tested, yeah, which is great. But sometimes you do see that tempo, right, 360th in the country, which means limited possessions. Typically, when you're a really good basketball team or a really good football team, let's say, the more possessions, the cream is going to rise to the top, so the margin for error does shrink down a little bit when you don't have that type of tempo to sort of say, if we are the best offense in the country, or we think we're the best defense in the country, the more possessions on either side, we're going to be able to use that advantage here for ourselves. It hasn't happened there, and that's okay. We'll see if it goes. Cincinnati, Kansas, and Baylor, three straight wins, yeah, probably on that schedule. Two of those games home, one game away at Baylor, and away you go into your conference championship. But this is great to see, as you pointed out, Houston not coming over from like the American Conference. Like, hey, that's a pretty easy one. This is the Big 12. Last 10 years here, you can argue the best, yeah, conference in college basketball, and they are handling their business.
16-1 straight up for Houston this year, 11-6 against the number. And again, 13 straight road wins, which is something Michigan did last night on the road in a difficult place to knock off the Huskers. That would be Pinnacle Bank Arena in Lincoln. A 30-17 against the spread record for Fred Hoiberg Huskers entering last night, the best cover team in the Big Ten. 39-8 straight up in the last 3 years. But DRS, last night in an ugly basketball game, it was Michigan prevailing. 15th in the country in a three-point win. 49-46. In the shot clock era, because I did the math last night, this is the first Big Ten conference game in men's hoops that both teams scored fewer than 50 points and both shot worse than 30% from the floor and less than 25% from three. An atrocious offensive game, but the Wolverines at the end of the day stack up yet another win in Big Ten play. They're 13th this season with a three-point road win. They were a 1.5-point favorite in Lincoln. They cover that number as well.
Yeah, play good defense over Nebraska, just didn't play good offense. Same thing with Michigan, but it turns out that they were the victors yesterday, 49-46. As we pointed out, three-point shooting was going to be the key in this game. Michigan can sling it, but they were on the road against a team that defends the three-point shot decent, 18.5% from three-point range, 61%, as we pointed out, from the free throw line. That should be good enough for a victory for Nebraska, and you could put that on the schedule, because coming in 7-9, that would have moved them up to 8-9 in conference play in a tough Big Ten conference, but now you drop to 7-10, makes things a little bit, yep, tougher. But again, Michigan, if you are 13-3 through 16 games in your conference, doesn't matter how you win, man. Just pick up the wins on the road. That's all that matters.
Plenty more college basketball coverage coming your way up next on TEL.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the Early Line on this Tuesday morning, recapping a jam-packed Monday night in college basketball. One final note on the Michigan-Nebraska game last night, the Wolverines winning by 3, 49-46. They were a slight pick'em favorite in Lincoln. DRS, 14th game for the Maize and Blue this year, decided by 5 points or fewer. Their 10th win in those 14 games, both leading high major men's basketball programs around the nation. Also, Big Ten win number 13 for Dusty May in his first year in Ann Arbor. That now a program record for the most conference wins by a Michigan head coach in his first year leading the Maize and Blue. Successful, which has really been the story for the Kansas Jayhawks. But DRS, yesterday was an interesting day for KU. Not ranked in the AP Top 25 for the first time in 4 years, snapping an 80-week streak of being placed inside the AP poll. Just the second time in 313 AP polls dating back to January of 2009, Kansas has been on the outside looking in. So how would the Jayhawks respond with a road Big 12 game in Boulder against Colorado? Pretty well. They win by 7, 71-64, covering as a 6.5-point road favorite.
Yeah, the 40-year-old freshman out there, Hunter Dickinson, showed up. What's that, 32 points, 13 rebounds, yeah. 10 of those were defensive. So he certainly played his part, but also Kansas still struggling. Sometimes when you do play in elevation, it does affect your jump shot, only 23% from three-point range. But how about this? Like, usually with Hunter Dickinson on your team, say you got 13 rebounds, you probably won the rebounding battle, which is why you won. How about 31 total rebounds for Kansas, 46 total rebounds for the Colorado Buffaloes, but that shows you they didn't shoot all that well either. 20% from three-point range, only 38% as a team at home. But also, Colorado's 11-17 on the season, really bulked up in that preseason action because conference play, 2-15 overall. If you're Kansas, like you want to say, Ben, you got to start somewhere. So even picking up minor victories on the road against Colorado should be able to help the confidence out. 19-9, 10-7 overall in conference play, but a lot of those expectations from the preseason haven't been fulfilled just yet for the Jayhawks.
Kansas is going to reach the NCAA tournament for a 35th consecutive year. The last time they missed when they were ineligible for the 1989 Big Dance. But DRS, they are one Big 12 loss away from their second consecutive 8 conference loss season. That would be the most since that 1988-89 campaign. But KU was not just expected to be on the right side of the Big Dance field. Kansas, for a second straight year, was the preseason number one team in the AP Top 25. We'll talk about that preseason AP poll that looks a lot different now in the Week 17 AP Top 25 than it did entering this season. DRS, Kansas has lost 3 of its last 6 games, so they've split their last 6. Their 3 wins, twice against this Buffaloes team, who has just 2 wins in conference play, and the other blowing out Oklahoma State in the fog over the weekend. Those two teams have combined for 7 Big 12 wins. Colorado did start 1-11 against the spread in Big 12 play. They had covered in their last 5 entering yesterday against KU. They do not cover by the hook at home. So let's talk about this Kansas team. A 19-9 straight up record, a 15-1 price to win the Final Four, a 65-1 price to win the national championship. Again, DRS, last year, not a great season. 8 conference losses for Kansas, did not get to the second weekend for a first time in a while, ousted in the round of 32. That would seem to be the outlook for this year's Jayhawks team, unless something can really change down the stretch.
And why advice to the people out there looking at Kansas? Maybe it's a buy-low spot. Don't do it. Don't do it. Look at their next 3 games to end the season. Texas Tech, top 10 team in the country. Houston, top 5 team in the country. Arizona, top 25 team in the country. So if I'm looking there and saying, you know what, the way Kansas played, they're probably going to lose 2 out of 3 of those games, maybe all 3. And if that's possible and you still like Kansas, oh, it's close games all the way through, that price point is going to be much better by the end of the next week and a half than it is right now. So if you are looking at those futures that we just popped up right there, do not bite just yet. Those numbers will get better over the next week and a half.
You might be asking, why were the Jayhawks, after an 8-loss Big 12 season, ousted in the round of 32, even ranked number 1 in the AP Top 25 in the preseason? Because of a transfer class that was supposed to be a heck of a lot better than this. Zeke Mayo from South Dakota State, 4
Zeke.
Points in 30 minutes. Rylan Griffin, the transfer from Alabama, a sharpshooter, 1 of 4 from 3, 10 points. And A.J. Storr, who scored nearly 17 points per game last year for Wisconsin, 8 minutes off the bench in Oakland. Some good cardio at altitude last night. All on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
8-game NBA slate on a Monday night around the association, fully back from the All-Star break. So it is the stretch run of this NBA regular season where, because of the play-in tournament, spots 7 through 10, even some really bad teams have the opportunity of, I guess, getting to the NBA postseason. And that was on full display last night with a big play-in tournament game, or at least with play-in tournament implications, between the Bulls and the 76ers in Philadelphia. We did not expect to see Joel Embiid, as he is still going through all of the prognostics around his injured knee that has a ton of swelling. They're taking some different theories on how to treat JoJo if they would shut him down for the remainder of this year. Maybe if Philadelphia was able to snap a 7-game slide, Joel Embiid might return for the hunt for the play-in tournament. That's if they were able to stop a 7-game skid. Because, or 6-game skid, I should say, because now DRS... No, it's an 8, right? 8 losses in a row for Philadelphia. 8 consecutive L's for Philly. As the 76ers get flat out embarrassed on their home floor last night, losing by 32 to the Bulls, 142-110. Chicago firmly occupying that 10th spot in the Eastern Conference play-in tournament. But the focus is not on Chicago, who wins outright, Donnie, as a 4.5-point road underdog. The focus is on Philadelphia, who has lost 8 consecutive games and is 17 games below 500 now at 20-37.
Yeah, and we're not even talking about like, hey, just a tough stretch, man. You went on the road. It was OKC. It was Dallas when they had Luka. It was the Lakers with LeBron. It was OKC. It was Denver at elevation. Woo! Let's get back to the East. Like, look at some of the losses there in that streak. Yeah. Now, the Pistons are a better basketball team to lose that by 13 points. But the one that really set the alarm bells for me was the home game against the Toronto Raptors, who can't get out of their own way. And they lost that game 106-103. Then followed that up with a loss to the horrendous Nets, get bounced by the Celtics, lose again to the Nets, and then get beat by the Bulls by 32 points when you're down 50 at points in the fourth quarter here. It's time to wrap up the season for the Sixers because, you know, looking at championship teams and non-championship teams and teams like on the rise and teams like falling back, the Sixers are landing in that, like, what are we actually playing for? We know Joel Embiid is going to be healthy the rest of the way, probably doing even more damage to that knee. Yes, we're probably going to be the 10th or 9th seed in the play-in and then quickly get erased in that round or the next round right after it. And then we don't get a draft pick because it's lottery protected and we lose it if it's above the top 6 in the draft this year. You're better off tanking. The Sixers have done it, and the fans are okay with it. Because the one thing I understand as a fan, what are you doing for me? Is this a young team trying to gel and we're making the playoffs would really help them for next year? Or is it an aging veteran team that you're doing damage by playing them out here? Tank the rest of the way. The joke was they have 20 wins. They shouldn't get to 21 here. And I firmly believe that. Joel Embiid should not play another minute the rest of the way. Paul George should hit the bench. And even Tyrese Maxey, he's used that one bright spot to say, you know what? I'll play out there 40 minutes a game. I'll shoot 35 times. I'll score 38 points and drop 10 dimes. He was even brutal last night, looking disinterested.
Yeah.
The season is over for the Philadelphia 76ers. Just pull the plug right now, and hopefully you can head into the draft and get a top 5, top 6 pick, which can help you for next year with a healthier Joel Embiid by taking care of his knee now as opposed to later.
Donnie, I told you that I bet Philadelphia to make the postseason, to make the playoffs, I should say, because the play-in tournament, technically the NBA postseason at the All-Star break with a 30% profit boost on our lovely FanDuel Sportsbook. Just a small bet, maybe to have something, because if the 76ers at the break, just a game and a half out of a play-in tournament spot, could get there, they would be the most talented team by far and favored in every game, even if they needed 2 victories to see the actual playoffs and be the 8th seed. I would cash that bet, not expecting much more by the time they got to the actual playoffs. You told me it makes sense from a talent perspective if everybody is going to play the remainder of this regular season. But the Sixers are a few embarrassing losses away in the immediate aftermath of the All-Star break from shutting everything down. I think they have reached that point. Joel Embiid is trying to see other advanced theories to how to deal with his knee. I think DRS, we are just a couple of days, if not hours away from the Shams Charania breaking news that Joel Embiid is out for the remainder of 2024-25. To be down by as many as 50 last night in Philadelphia, to lose by 32 in a game that still meant something, to be booked as a 4.5-point home favorite, and lose outright by 30-plus points is embarrassing. Philadelphia now this year, 7-18 against the spread, booked as a favored side. DRS, that is the worst cover percentage, unsurprisingly, for any NBA team this year, booked as a favorite in more than 20 games. And this is not a Bulls team that is above 500. This is a Chicago team, even with the win last night, that remains 12 games under 500. Again, as bad as it could be, the Sixers are so lucky that the Eagles won a Super Bowl, because if that did not happen, there would be a ton more onus on this 76ers side right now.
No, there would be. And also understand the facts were, like, you were just looking at the board yesterday. The line opened up as the Sixers as a favorite at 3.5. It closed around 5.5. And all throughout the day, whether it was the early line or doing money line, saying, I don't understand. There are handicappers out there back in the Philadelphia 76ers based on what we've been watching here. It's like, oh, well, it's the Bulls. They got to beat. And I'm like, no, they haven't beat anybody, it feels like, for an entire month, even with their full starting lineup out. And once Joel Embiid was announced out, it's like, okay, they're behind the eight ball. Maybe they get a little bit quicker. Yabusele starts the game, 13 minutes, no points in that. So it's just been a brutal stretch run where there's no fan in Philadelphia. They're like, you know what? Run the boys out there. I paid for my tickets for next Tuesday night's game, and I want to see them all out there. Like, no, just pull the plug and tank, because it would be different. Like, you know what? No matter what happens here, we're getting our first-round draft pick. You don't have that. You're right in position to save your first-round draft pick, which is top six protected for you. Anything six or higher, you lose that pick. So you're going to make a run to the playoffs and then get the eighth overall pick and don't even get that for next year? No, you can't have that. Stop it. Pull the plug right now.
And Donnie, as you mentioned, it's not like they're getting beat by the Celtics twice in this eight-game skid with the Knicks mixed in and the Thunder on the other side. Philadelphia has been booked as a favorite in six of these eight games. Of course, they have not covered in any of the eight L's in a row. Mm-hmm. Certainly not when booked as a favorite six times. So here are the Eastern Conference play-in tournament standings at this moment. The Magic, one game shy of that 500 mark, playing a little bit better since the All-Star break. They now have a little bit of a cushion in front of the Atlanta Hawks. The Miami Heat, 26-30, a full game behind the Hawks for that 7-8 split now in the 9 spot. And the Bulls have given themselves a small cushion, a 1.5 game lead over the Brooklyn Nets, and even 17 games sub 500, riding an 8 game losing streak. Philadelphia somehow, some way, just 2.5 games out still of qualifying in some form or fashion for the NBA postseason. Donnie, those bottom three teams, the Bulls, the Nets, and the Sixers, I don't think anybody actually even wants to get into the play-in tournament, but somebody will be just good enough of one of the worst teams in the NBA to see that 10 spot.
Yeah, like the theory would be, if you are the Sixers and your players and you have hearts, like, hey, you know what? We'll get out there, because just our talent alone should be enough to get the 10th seed over the Chicago Bulls and the Nets at this point. But as an organization, if you are a healthy organization, you understand the task at hand with a high-paying payroll is we need to win championships. Costing ourselves draft picks to get into the first round of the playoffs only to get knocked out once again doesn't make any sense. And I don't know what happened to Nick Nurse, one of the better head coaches, and you're coming in and say, hey, you know, it's a breath of fresh air. Like, I understand it's been trials and tribulations, but this roster, even with the bench they gave him, is better than the record at 20-37. It's not as if Joel Embiid missed the entire season, or you never got Paul George back, or Maxey missed 2.5 months with a knee injury. This team has been in and out of the lineup, but on a night-to-night basis, you're still having the majority of the players available, and you still stink this bad. I wonder at the end of the season if it's a complete reset once again, when for most Sixers fans, including myself, like, you know what? Nick Nurse is a pretty good hire for the Philadelphia 76ers. Looks like a disaster.
Yeah, it does not seem like things are going very well. By the way, the Hawks beat the Heat last night by 12 in Atlanta. Uh-huh. Low-scoring game, 98-86. Miami minus 700 to be a play-in tournament team. Still a plus 140 price in the 76ers. More around the NBA next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on this Tuesday morning on the early line on Sports Grid, continuing to go around the association throughout the NBA. An embarrassment in Philadelphia, a stunner in Oklahoma City, in a road rally that made the record books last night for the Minnesota Timberwolves against the Thunder. The T-Wolves down by as many as 25 points in the second half, trailed by 24 entering the fourth and final quarter. They come all the way back to win in overtime against the Oklahoma City Thunder, 131-128 DRS last night in OKC. The T-Wolves closed as a 12-point road underdog. They win outright. They closed regulation on a 16-0 run. They win it in OT. A total of 228.5, skies over. It was the second straight night for these two teams doing battle. OKC wins in the Twin Cities. Minnesota covers. The Timberwolves make history last night in OKC with that road rally late in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, how about the guy who's supposed to be one of the better defenders in the NBA leading his team at a minus 22 last night in plus minus? That was Lu Dort. But outside of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he didn't get a lot of clean efforts here across the board. It should have been an easy victory. And once again, just getting back to a team that was 26-3 on their home court with a massive lead in the fourth quarter and let that one slip away. That's certainly a tough loss. But also, credit the Minnesota Timberwolves for in their own building the night before losing, coming back on the road, getting absolutely hammered. They could have tucked their tail in the fourth quarter, said, you know what, it's a back-to-back, just not our night. But they kept fighting all the way through to force overtime and then go over the total and beat the Thunder in extras yesterday. So for me, I said the over was the better play, but I'm shocked that OKC lost that game. I am.
And a lot of that rally came with Anthony Edwards on the bench, as you might anticipate, seeing as you weren't expecting to win the game down by nearly 25 points in the fourth quarter. But still a pretty good performance from the Ant-Man. 17 points, 13 boards, 8 dimes in a key block of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in the closing seconds of OT. Naz Reid, 22 points. Jaden McDaniels, 27 points. And a bunch of guys off the bench with at least 12 points. Rob Dillingham, TSJ, Terrence Shannon Jr., and Nikhil Alexander Walker had 21 points as well. So a huge victory. The first team in NBA history to be down by at least 20 points on the road in the fourth quarter and come all the way back to beat the team with an 80% winning percentage or better. OKC certainly qualifies, 46-10 entering last night. And the T-Wolves, a really good underdog this year, 10-5-1 against the spread. And Donnie, we've said it. Minnesota, a team expected to contend for a Western Conference crown once again after making the conference finals a season ago, now 32-27. One more win, but also one more loss currently to the Clippers. But technically, they are in the same spot, although the Clippers have an advantage for the sixth spot in the Western Conference standings, which would be a playoff bid. And for Minnesota in the seventh spot, a play-in tournament position. Denver last night on the road in Indianapolis against the Pacers, and a career night for Nikola Jokic. A career-best 19 assists to lead the Nuggets to a 125-116 win in Indy. Denver covers as a 4.5-point road favorite.
Yeah, good win for the Denver Nuggets yesterday. And Jokic did play 39 minutes, but didn't give you that normal, 25, 16, and 10. It was actually 19 assists. I didn't see that. 9 rebounds. Yeah. So 19 assists, which is kind of funny because when you look at that, it's like, well, he's a point guard. Do you understand how Denver plays? Everything is run through him. And a lot of those are just handoff jump shots where he gets the credit for the assist. But hey, he's doing it right. And if everybody could get 19 assists, they would all do that at the same time. I was taking the 4.5 points yesterday from the Indiana Pacers, but it wasn't even like one of those, like, hey, they blew a late fourth quarter lead. Down at the end of one, down in the second, down at the end of two, and then the third quarter lost that by 11. So they needed a comeback in the fourth quarter just to get this game within single digits. So a comfortable win for the Denver Nuggets on the road, who now improved to 18-11 there. And by the way, again, 19 assists for Jokic. Good. Cute, man.
A career best for the Joker, a magnificent night in Indianapolis. Denver now 23-21-1 against the spread. But maybe more importantly, DRS, the Nuggets did lose at home to the Lakers on Saturday night in a huge game from Luka Doncic. That snapped a 9-game win streak for Denver on either side of the All-Star break. So with a victory last night in Indianapolis, make it winners of 10 of their last 11, and they have covered in 7 of those 10 wins as well. Denver doing pretty well at this stage of the year. And when you look at the standings in that second spot, still at 8.5 games behind the Oklahoma City Thunder, but the Nugs have that playoff pedigree we have talked about often. A career night for Nikola Jokic. Did he cut into Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's advantage to win the NBA MVP award? No, because Shai still nearly scored 40 last night. Despite the career best 19 dimes out of Jokic, he is still in second in the MVP odds, plus 340, and SGA remains a minus 500 favorite. About 2 weeks away from a back-to-back between OKC and Denver, March 9th and 10th in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, that could pay off later and see also one of those measuring stick type performances you have. But the interesting part about it is it doesn't look like there's anything Nikola Jokic can do other than the Thunder lose like 10 games in a row at this point. Because that's a hefty number. And you're right. Like, he got just had an 18 and 19 last night and almost had a triple-double on the road in a quality victory. Like, it's just not good enough. We've seen that before when we've never seen 19 assists, as you said before, from Jokic at this point. So it'll be a fun close to the season, but outside of 40, 20, and 20s closing the gap here between the Thunder, I don't know if we're going to be able to get an MVP again on the board for Jokic.
It's one of the funny things, right? Career best 19 dimes out of Nikola Jokic, but you're like, he only had 9 rebounds, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Only had 18 points. Yeah. Didn't even, you know what I'm saying? Like that, fair or unfair, that is the standard that Nikola Jokic has set, winning 3 MVP hardwares in the last 4 seasons. And again, despite the historic loss for OKC last night, leading by 24 points entering the fourth quarter, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander still 39 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 assists to lead OKC last night, and did have a plus-minus of +2 despite that dramatic comeback out of Minnesota. OKC did lose. They're still 46-11. We showed you the direct head-to-head from the individual, and OKC, of course, will have that direct head-to-head advantage as long as they maintain that lead for the number one spot in the Western Conference, currently at 8.5 games. Let's talk some history in the Motor City. The Detroit Pistons have gone streaking. 7 wins in a row. Up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Throughout the streets of the Motor City, they are chanting once again, Detroit basketball. Make it 7 consecutive victories for the Pistons after a home win last night against the LA Clippers, who were without a couple of key contributors, but 106-97. DRS, when we were breaking down this game yesterday, the Clippers were a slight road favorite in the Motor City. Detroit closed as a 2-point favorite. They cover on that number. 7 straight wins for Detroit. This is the first 7-game win streak for the Pistons in more than a decade, since late December 2014 into early January 2015. At 32-26 straight up, it is the best start for Detroit through 58 games of an NBA campaign since the 07-08 season, the last time the Pistons won a playoff game. And if the season ended today, Detroit wouldn't even be in the play-in tournament. They would be in the playoffs from the very jump. The Pistons playing as well as we have seen in the last decade in Detroit.
And also, getting on win streaks, you do need some breaks, which is that the Clipper is not bringing Norm Powell to the table and or Kawhi Leonard. So it's just James Harden out there, who he didn't bring much to the table in playing. 5 of 22 from the field, which equated only to 18 points. And I'm actually surprised that Detroit was only a 2.5-point favorite once those starting lineups were announced yesterday. Pretty clean run for them in this game. A double-digit victory, almost, but also playing good defense, holding the Clippers to under 97. But it's interesting that you say, like, dating back to, like, you know, 2006, 2007, how brutal that organization has actually been on the court for one of those teams that we always looked at as one of the blue bloods in the NBA. Good to see him playing good basketball, but again, 32-26 is a lightning year for 15 years. That's pretty crazy how bad Detroit has actually been.
Yeah, absolutely so, DRS. It has not been a great picture for the Pistons as of late. They have not really been rewarded in how the ping pong balls have bounced in the draft lottery, but J.B. Bickerstaff, after being ousted from Cleveland, has made some gains here in Detroit with a young roster and maximizing what the Pistons have been able to do. They haven't been booked as a favorite all that often, but they're now 11-10 against the spread as the favorite side this year. They have won 7 straight. They have been a favorite 5 times in this win streak. They have covered in all 5 of those games booked as a favorite. So 32-26 for Detroit, currently the 6th seed in the Eastern Conference. 31-26 for LA, also currently the 6th seed in their respective conference standings. But look at the difference, DRS, in the overall outlook. Hey, Detroit, congrats on the 7 consecutive wins, matching the longest currently active in the NBA. We don't think you're going to be able to do much in a potential opening round matchup as of this moment, having to visit Madison Square Garden and the New York Knicks. The Clippers, at full strength, I guess, more of an optimistic outlook in the Western Conference.
Exactly. And it's not to say that the Eastern Conference is better than the Western Conference, but you have to understand the facts that are going to happen here. Once you line up in the playoffs, the expectations that Harden, obviously, you know, and more importantly, the Claw are going to be in that lineup, Kawhi Leonard, as opposed to Detroit just trying to learn how to win. And maybe they pop bottles just by making the playoffs, because it's something that Detroit doesn't do that regularly at this point. So I can see the differential between the two ball clubs here, because when the Clippers are full gas versus the Pistons are full gas in the respective conferences, it's not close here. The much better team is the Clippers. They were just down a few guys last night on the road to Detroit. No disrespect for Detroit. Nice win for them, but the expectations for Detroit, not necessarily high.
I mean, listen, when you don't have Norm Powell, when you don't have Norman Powell in the lineup, things are going to be very difficult. Cade Cunningham in the lineup for the Pistons, 32 points, 9 boards, 7 dimes, 3 steals. DRS, of course, Cade Cunningham, first overall pick back in the summer of 2021 after a sensational 1 year at Oklahoma State. When you look at what Cade Cunningham has done now under J.B. Bickerstaff, a coach known as a program builder, or gets the best out of his young talent, if you will. This in his 4th year in the NBA for Cunningham, the most points per game he has averaged, the most assists per game he has averaged, the most rebounds per game he has averaged in his career. A lot to like right now with the Pistons, one of the better stories, at least at this stage, from an optimistic standpoint, a positive standpoint around the NBA.
Yeah, learning how to win. That's the first key for when you're trying to get an organization off the ground. And you do want to have Cade Cunningham, who you understand how talented a college player he was, wasn't surrounded with the best talent and also the best coaching, now starting to come into his own. A top-level player starting to find himself. That's why the Pistons now are above 500 and fighting for the playoffs.
When's the last time you saw a minus 4,000 price on Detroit to make the NBA playoffs? That's where it stands right now. A substantial lead, by the way, over Orlando for that 6-7 split. Hour number 2 coming to next.